The Buddha once said, train thus. I will breathe in, experiencing the whole body. I will breathe out, experiencing the whole body. This is such a helpful initiation and pointer into meditation itself. And I would suggest it's right at the heart of our practice. Practicing with breath awareness is an entryway for us into the body, into the moment. It's a light anchor. One that can fade from our awareness so quickly the moment we begin thinking about anything at all. And in that sense, in being awake to the sensation of the breath, we can be drawn back into the presence of the physical form of the body itself, which is doing the breathing. And this returning to this moment, again and again, is our practice. So often, when we are offering an orientation to someone who is just beginning to meditate, we encourage sitting with the breath and with awareness of the breath, and counting the breath so that we can link these, what we often think of as separate aspects of the self, the mind and the body. The counting connects us with the sensation of breathing. The Buddha in another sutra speaks about how when we breathe in and it's shallow, we might just notice that we are breathing and it is shallow. And when we are breathing and it is deep, we notice that it is deep. But we don't even need to control whether it is shallow or deep. Because on a fundamental level, this practice is not about controlling our experience. It's simply about being aware of our experience. We live so much of life with a kind of goal orientation. We are aiming toward that which we are not. When we are hungry, we aim to be full. When we are working, we are aiming to be done. And in a way, these compass points are of course necessary. It is important when something is harming ourselves or someone else that we do what we can to alleviate that suffering. This is a big part of our practice, and it's where the precepts come from. We learn with the precepts the ways that we cause harm to ourselves and others, and we aim to stop engaging in those kinds of behaviors. And so often in our aiming to improve situations, we add a little bit extra. We do more than simply engage in an appropriate response. We do more than simply eat when we are hungry. I think that sometimes what we do, particularly in other forms of suffering, is we imagine that there is a self in there that we can fix. So we don't relate with most of our suffering as something connected to causes and conditions that can simply be changed. We tend to think of our suffering often as emanating from some problem in ourself. And this is where we heap suffering on suffering. Charlotte Joko Beck says, "I have found that most human beings, particularly Western-raised human beings, feel fundamentally they're worthless, really worthless. Unless we've been practicing for a long time or are extraordinarily lucky in how we were brought up in the world, most of us feel this. We have our own little quirks that give our sense of worthlessness a personal flavor and style. But that's what it is. We don't want to feel worthless. We don't even want to hear or know about it. It's very, very painful to feel that you're worthless or unlovable. That feeling creates a running tension that we may be unaware of until we sit, and then it all comes out. That's why sitting is so important, as you turn away from your thoughts and get back into the body. You're experiencing your own core pain. It's never hidden. It's always right here. As we sit, as we develop the power and sensitivity to watch those thoughts and feelings cascade around, we learn an enormous amount about ourselves. We begin to sense, if we haven't already, the enormous pervading tension inside us. Though we may not have noticed, it has been there for as long as we can remember." And so, of course, as we enter back into the body, according to Buddha's encouragement, sometimes it can feel like we are suffering more. This is not accurate, I don't believe. What's really happening is that we are becoming aware of the unconscious suffering that has actually been in the background all along, and perhaps that we have been running from, and that may have been driving our actions in much of our lives. We don't want to feel worthless. We don't want to feel unloved. We don't want to feel like we don't deserve love, attention, care, our own self-love. We don't want to feel even much more subtle varieties of these senses of self. We don't want to feel that we just aren't quite good enough. So often, for many periods, stretches of our lives, we may operate in a kind of denial. We may tell a surface story to cover the underlying feeling. We may overcompensate in one way or another. And this, of course, is a kind of tension that lives inside of us. This underlying sense of not quite being good enough. Dukkha. A kind of suffering. A sense that we aren't living in alignment with our deepest values, perhaps. With our deepest nature. We're somehow out of sync, and it troubles us. But we just keep applying more skim coats to cover it up. Easier not to feel this, we might think. Pema Chodron says, "The most fundamental aggression to ourselves, the most fundamental harm we can do to ourselves, is to remain ignorant by not having the courage and the respect to look at ourselves honestly and gently. When we are confronted with difficult times in our lives and feel as if things are breaking apart, we only produce more suffering when we attempt to put the pieces back together. Instead, when we bravely choose to rest in the uncertainty and meet suffering without running away, awakening occurs. What is this awakening to which she refers? Well, it's kind of ironic. Ajahn Chah says, all things in the world have the characteristics of instability, unsatisfactoriness, and the absence of a permanent ego or soul. If you see all of existence in this light, attachment and clinging to the skandhas will gradually be reduced. This is because you see the true characteristics of the world. Perhaps part of what we don't want to face is this impermanence. The fact that everything is changing. Sometimes I think we might rather believe that there is a fixed and permanent self. Even if it means that we're building up fortresses around our pain. The pain that results from believing in this fixed or permanent self that is in some way worthless. Non-existent, in fact. Hard to look and see and acknowledge that we are actually always shape-shifting, always changing moment after moment, and we can't find anything that remains just as it is. The self, we might say, is like a rainbow. A constellation made of water, air, sunlight, even of the person standing on the ground beneath and seeing the rainbow. Without all of these factors, the rainbow ceases to exist. The sense of self is born out of causes and conditions. And causes and conditions are always changing. Sometimes we feel good, sometimes we feel badly about ourselves. Even that sense of worthlessness that we might feel is not actually a fixed self. And yet we are scared of it and think we need to fix it because we believe that it is a fixed self. And in that way, we become more entangled with that sense of self the more that we try to run from it. That which we run from controls us. We find ourselves putting a great deal of energy into overcompensating and painting over and hiding from these underlying, if we will, senses of self. And it is standing still, or in our case, sitting still, in the light of awareness, which offers us a glimpse into the impermanence of those senses of self. The fact that they don't have any fixed essence or any referent other than changing feelings and circumstances and causes and conditions. All we actually find is change. This might be a bit scary. We then wonder, well, who am I? What am I? And this is where the Buddha Dharma offers consolation. To bring us back to the opening quotation of this Dharma talk, Buddha's teaching. He says, I will breathe in, experiencing the whole body. I will breathe out, experiencing the whole body. Now, we might think of that as breathing in and feeling the sensation of our feet on the floor, if we're sitting in a chair, feeling our fingertips, feeling the skin on the top of our skull tingle with the slightest fluctuation of air, breathing out, feeling the butterflies in our tummies, this little taste of excitement and anxiety, feeling tears welling up behind the eyes. Whatever it may be, we may limit the body to simply those physical experiences. But Buddha, in referring to the whole body, might be inviting us to an even deeper investigation. What are we? Are we simply that sense of self that we sometimes experience, perhaps that worthlessness or that sense of not being good enough? Oh, I gotta keep working at that. We get a constant feeling of a project to do, to do, to do on the list. Always that compass point aiming away from this very moment. And Buddha is inviting us to appreciate this very moment, the very moment that we are running from. For it's only here and now that we can experience awakening, not in the future, never in the future. There is no future. There is no past. From the perspective of non-duality, just this. And in just this moment, the whole body, why do we imagine that it ends at the tip of our fingers? As we sit here together, my voice weaves its way through your mind. The sensations of the body are also part of your awareness, but so is the sound of the truck passing by outside. So is the distant airplane in the sky. So is the light of the sun, the light of the stars, the light of the moon. All part of us, all interwoven and connected in one body. The whole body is so much more vast and greater than what we imagine ourselves to be. Now, we don't know this until we see it for ourselves. We're invited in this practice to just sit and continue to look more and more closely. What am I? What is this? Pointing a finger deep into our own heart, what is this? And we may find that notions of separation, of separateness, are just that. They're notions, they're ideas, useful though they may be. In the same way that the precepts are useful as guideposts for us about how to behave in this world and alleviate suffering. And yet, we can add so much extra when we believe that we are separate beings that need to be fixed. There is also a way of experiencing this life in this very moment as complete in and of itself. And if we miss that because we are always aiming outside of ourselves, we suffer more. This teaching means passing through the gateway of our suffering. It means looking closely and deeply into it, that we might see its true nature. A mental formation born out of notions of separateness, which our eye of practice can and does transcend. Our job is just to keep looking, to keep noticing, to keep asking, what actually is? And allow the Dharma to show itself to us. Thank you.